Welcome to Supply Chain Now, the voice of global supply chain. Supply Chain Now focuses on the best in the business for our worldwide audience, the people, the technologies, the best practices, and today's critical issues, the challenges and opportunities. Stay tuned to hear from those making global business happen right here on Supply Chain Now.
Hey, good afternoon. Scott Luton, Greg White with you here on Supply Chain Now. Sorry, I was busy dancing in my home studio to that new music, Greg.
Right. That's pretty cool. I love the timer. I hear somebody laid claim to that timer. Next, someone's going to lay claim to the sundial, and we won't be able to use that either.
Nice.
How sad of a business do you have if you have to lay claim to a timer?
Well, hey, different strokes, different folks. But right. Today, on a high note, we're going to be continuing our reverse logistics series right here on Supply Chain Now with our dear friends over at the Reverse Logistics Association. So, Greg, this has been a well-received series in a growing in importance and in probably scope portion of global business, right?
It's huge. I mean, it's such an enormous part of the economy now because of this massive shift to e-commerce, not that there wasn't already a huge amount of returns. And every day I'm hit with a new statistic that I will misquote in front of Tony, but that still amazes me. So, yep. I mean, yeah, it's very, very important stuff. It's great for sustainability as well as business continuity. So,
well, you know, so you mentioned Tony Schroeder will be with us here today, the executive director with the Reverse Logistics Association. It's been great to get to know him better over the last couple of years, and he brought a great business leader with him, which we'll introduce here momentarily. But in the meantime, before we get started, a couple of quick programming notes. First off, if you enjoy this live stream here today, check us out wherever you get your podcast from. You can check out Supply Chain Now. You can check out Tequila Sunrise, which is spelled as Greg's gotten his name there. Greg, you had a big week, you and the team at Tequila Sunrise this week, right?
Yeah, we got to interview a couple of purely coincidental, just amazing female tech leaders, which is always exciting. Also, I have booked a future female in technology, my middle daughter, Delaney. She has agreed to come on the show in the future. One of the best salespeople in tech that you will ever meet. So I've managed to talk her into coming on the show. So I think that's going to be exciting as well. But yeah, Dr. Sally Eves and her Tech for Good initiative, and Don Salvucci Favier, who is the CEO and Chief Product Officer of greenscreens.ai. So impressive discussions. If you get a chance, go to, obviously, wherever you get your podcasts, or YouTube, the Tequila Sunrise YouTube channel. Listen up.
Listen up. That's right. All right. So let's share a couple of opportunities with everybody on the front end. We're going to talk about one of these deeper after we bring our guests on. So March 3rd, we got a really neat event coming up. Reverse Logistics and Six River Systems are facilitating not only this panel session, which I'm pleased to be part of, but there's going to be networking. They were sending out some really cool adult beverage mix kits. If you signed up by yesterday, hopefully, Greg, you signed up because you're not getting
I did not. I don't drink.
And we're getting a site visit of Project Vert, which has been an organization on the move. So all of that, of course, you see the panelists there, including our friend Tom Marr from Dell. If you remember interviewing Tom in Vegas way back when, Greg.
Yeah. I remember learning how to pronounce his name.
Right. Well, you know, so make sure you join up. You register for the event. Registration is still open March 3rd. I think it starts at 4 p.m. And we've got the link in the show notes. March 23rd, we've got a great upcoming webinar with our friends at SAP. Like we talked about yesterday, Industry 4.0 has been here. It's been here for years. Mike Lackey and Tobias Hoffmeister Mike's with SAP, Tobias is with MHP Americas. They're gonna share some creative applications that are really moving the needle across industry with a big focus on manufacturing, as you might expect, March 23rd. And finally,
go ahead, MHP, Greg. Associated with a major sports car manufacturer. So
yeah.
Exciting stuff there.
It is. And I don't know who you're talking about, but I'm going to follow your lead. What organization? Porsche.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't even know who the major players are in automotive racing these days.
Well, Porsche always, in fact, Porsche has their own sort of league. And so, you know, there's so much amateur racing that has been going on. Talk about social distancing. Your whole goal is to get away from the crowd. But yeah, Porsche is big, of course, Ferrari, McLaren, a number, Jaguar even. I mean, a number of organizations, BMW, it just depends. There's so many classes of racing now. It's unbelievable.
Well, I've always been lost, but Carroll Shelby's got some great documentaries on Netflix and others. So if you're looking for some weekend viewing, that's really cool related to racing. All right. One final, I'm gonna surprise Greg and maybe even Tony with this here. So we met Tevin Taylor about a year ago in some change at the big RLA event in Vegas. And we look forward to getting back in person, as you were just alluding to. Today, 1 year ago, FedEx named its first African-American CEO, Ramona Hood. So, you know, we're big history nerds here, but what a great, great celebration of that with a big company. So well done, Ramona Hood. Maybe we'll get her on the show at some point soon. What do you think, Greg?
Yeah, absolutely. We need to. Look, the culture of FedEx is really, really impressive. Just a quick analogy here. So a good friend of the show, Tom Valentine, if you've ever seen one of our ridiculous outtakes from MODEX, you know Tom. He helps a lot of philanthropic organizations to move freight and that sort of thing. Got in a bind over the weekend. One of the major carriers pulled out. We connected him with Tevin at FedEx. And Tevin has mobilized the FedEx freight and supply chain teams to try and help on less than a week's notice to get the sort of roadshow going for this philanthropic organization for clean water. So
love that. Lots of tie-ins and old TV. Tom Valentine's always on the move.
Every day is Valentine's Day.
That's right. All right. So before we bring on our two guests here today, say hello to a few folks that are tuned in via various channels. Kevon, back with us after yesterday. Kevon, hope this finds you well via LinkedIn. Hey, the star of the show yesterday, or one of our interviews, Azalea Davis. Zay, how you doing? And I'll be checking that timestamp. You know, anything overly tech, you know, Zay, can confuse me quick. Great to have you back. Victor via LinkedIn. Great to have you, Victor. Simon is with us. Travis is with us. Great to see you both. See here, Natalie Christian is with us. Hey, Natalie, hope this finds you well.
Wow, welcome back. Yeah.
Felicia, great to have you via LinkedIn. Part of the
always good to see her.
Dynamic RLA team.
Yep.
Pratik, great to see you again via LinkedIn. Rhonda is
back. We're getting closer, by the way, to that lunch or dinner, Pratik.
Yes.
So
let's mark our calendars.
Yeah, get ready to go.
Let's see here. Sushmita is with us via LinkedIn. Great to have you here. So welcome, everybody. You've got a great conversation in store with these two business leaders here. And, you know, as Greg, right before we bring him on, it dawns on me that I did not confirm how to pronounce Curtis's last name. But as we bring him on, we'll double check, make sure I get it right. So let's bring in our two featured guests, Curtis Grieve, Vice President for Liquidation and Remarketing with Inmar Intelligence, and Tony Schroeder, the Executive Director with the Reverse Logistics Association. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
How do we do, Curtis?
Oh, you nailed it. Perfect.
All right.
I never hear that. I never hear that, Curtis. Well, we really enjoyed the warm-up conversation. We should have recorded some of that. We were talking about Sideways, the movie, and plenty of other topics, but great to have you here as busy as you are on this Friday afternoon. One quick aside, Tony. Tom Mars' last name. Did we get that right with Dell?
That is correct.
Okay. Yep. Two for two, Greg. Man. Yeah. Right in time for baseball season. Okay. Well, we've really enjoyed this series here, this reinvigorated series here at Supply Chain Now, focused on the fascinating world of reverse logistics and returns, if you name it. It's such an important, as Greg mentioned, such an important element of global business, and we'll continue. So before we get to the heavy lifting, though, I want to have a little bit of fun. We've got our not-so-lightning round questions teed up, Greg. Are you ready?
I am.
So let's start with our new friend, Curtis Grieve. With Inmar. So, Curtis, what's a recent favorite read of yours or one of your go-tos for good information and news?
I'd have Measure What Matters by John Doerr. That's a great one. I mean, we're living in a world where it's all about data-driven decisions, and that's pretty critical, particularly in our business. That's a critical component.
Measure What Matters. I'm going to have to add that to the list. Good stuff there, Curtis. Same question to you, Tony. What's a great recent read or what's a go-to source for news and smart stuff?
On the read side, I tend to do escapism. So I'm reading the Kurt Wallander detective series. He's a Swedish detective, and it's a great series. Been reading it for a while, and he's portrayed by Kenneth Branagh on an Amazon series that's available. I need escapism because the emails flow kind of slows down on the business reading ability, although the smart briefs from NRF and CSCMP are always worthwhile going through. It's a nice brief summary, a way to kind of catch up quick.
Agreed. Yeah. And I see you've got your second cousin hanging on the wall right over your shoulder. How about that? We love our family pictures. Hey, to our community, drop in the comments what you're reading. As Aaliyah, who's with us earlier, she's reading three books at once. And as she shared with me yesterday, something for her brain, something for her heart, and something for laughs. And I love that approach. So drop those books in the comments. Next question, Curtis. So what, we've all picked up plenty of habits, good, bad, and indifferent during the pandemic. What has been one habit you've picked up over the last, say, 18 months that you're really glad you did, Curtis?
Honestly, I've actually gotten on a routine where I get 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night. Now, maybe because we're all working from home, but it's I've gotten spoiled, before, because you work, spend time with the family, read emails at night. Before you know it, it's midnight. Then you get up at 6 and kind of gotten on a regular thing, So it's that's probably about the biggest thing. And from a work standpoint, we've all adjusted to the home-based business. And that's a little spoiling, too, because now I can just go down and get my own coffee and all that sort of stuff. So that's pretty nice.
Yeah, there is something comforting about your own coffee.
Yes.
Really your own coffee, right?
That's right.
Yeah, certainly some trade-offs. And we were talking, I think yesterday, I missed my morning commute really early in the morning where I beat most of traffic coming into town, some of the problems I work through in my head, but be able to take your kids to school almost every day is a wonderful trade-off there. So thanks for sharing, Curtis. All right, so Tony, what's been one habit you've picked up here in the pandemic that you're glad you have?
Actually, I'm old school, and I picked up the habit of making more phone calls to people. I have not been a texter. I mean, I do it out of force because my son, it's the only way to communicate, but it's so nice to get on the phone and talk to people that, friends and colleagues, and something happens on a phone call that doesn't happen on text. There's a combustion there that something triggers something, and it's fantastic. So it's family, friends, and business colleagues. I've been trying to fill my day with more like live calls rather than text and emails. It's a nice throwback period. And the last year, it's been excellent for that.
Well put. All right. Right before I turn over to Greg here, I want to recognize two folks here. So Mark Erickson's also part of that dynamic RLA team. He was with us yesterday in our leadership focused, had a wonderful live stream with Charles and Enrique. So great to have you back here today with us, Mark. And Rhonda, speaking of habits we picked up, Rhonda says, me too, prioritizing sleep, much like Curtis. It's been hard for some folks, she says, when working from home, to step away and separate our time from work time and make our health a priority. So great points there from Rhonda. It's an ongoing challenge. Okay, Gregory, where are we going next, sir?
Yeah, Scott, I've got a quick question for you. What's one habit you've picked up? We never ask, Tony, we never ask Scott any questions, right?
No.
Nobody knows what he does, right?
So
what's one habit you've picked up that you're glad you have?
So there's several, but one of them in particular that I think we're going to do this weekend is we love, as a family going into a little small town right down the road, grabbing a sandwich, sitting in these park benches and just, watching the squirrels and the trees and whenever the people are downtown, hustling, bustling. It's just your moment of zen, I think, and to see the kids run around and play tag. It's a nice moment with the family.
Yeah, you've got a built-in like mini basketball team, right? Three kids. So,
that's right.
So I mean, really, they can effectively social distance and still have someone to play with. I think that's a huge benefit. All right, as long as we're on threes, then let's try this. Let's talk about three topics, and Curtis, I'd love it if you could go first. Let's talk about three topics in reverse logistics. Because I talk to so many companies in the investment world and that sort of thing, I am hearing from so many companies that are getting started or growing in this incredible industry. What are things that you've been tracking the most in the last few months or 12 months, or what do you see happening?
Well, I think one of the things is that with the growth in e-commerce, basically the whole landscape of the supply chain, including obviously reverse logistics, has changed. I mean, like, we think of it, you know, back when I first met Tony back in 1990 something, you know, we used to talk about reverse logistics as, okay, when the stuff gets to the return center, then you got to sort it and return it to the vendor and disposition it. Well, that's still the case today. But now it's more about the post-purchase consumer returns pipeline. So what that's done is that's dramatically expanded the scope and the requirements that retailers and manufacturers have, where now it's not just about when it gets to the return center. It starts when the consumer decides, I want to return it.
Right.
And what all is involved to, you know, keep up with customer service and the credit associated with that and the transportation to the store. Is it pickup, drop off? You know, you've probably heard, you know, there's been a lot of talk about ordering online, picking up the store. Well, there's also another side of that where you buy it online and you drop it and you return it to the store. So, and the difference in how you can handle those e-returns, because, you know, as everybody knows, your e-commerce returns are about, you know, three times the volume of normal brick and mortar returns, and about 70 to 80%, depending on category, can go back into stock. So you can't treat them like you could store returns, where they all just go back and then you're going to return it to the vendor, sell it, that sort of thing. So there's all kinds of implications, tracking the package, being able to make the actual returns process through returns bars and things like that. That's significant. And so we're working and thinking and focusing on developing that whole ecosystem. So that's probably the biggest thing. That's getting a lot of brain power, a lot of investment. And I think that's going to drive probably more change over the next 2 or 3 years than we've seen in the reverse logistics segment of the business for the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, I think BOPIS and BORIS are becoming so popular that it might be a show on Disney Plus if we blink next week, Greg. I don't know.
We love it.
Well, it is. You know, Kohl's has famously made their connection with Amazon as the returns bar, as Curtis described it, for Amazon. In fact, I just posted an article today about, it's pretty questionable about whether that is actually accretive to Kohl's business. But nonetheless, it is happening a lot. And I think the most important thing you said there, Curtis, is that the industry, right, reverse logistics, returns, whatever, re-commerce, whatever you want to call it, it starts with the consumer's decision to make that return. And I think that recognition has been really transformational. Plus, there is a ton of legislation in Europe in particular mandating returns in a sustainable way. So the industry has definitely expanded and changed over just probably the last year or so. I don't know, Tony, what jumps out at you? What are a couple things that you've seen? I mean, you see everything, so I'm really interested to see.
The things that are going on, and Curtis and others are actively involved with, is moving things faster. There's so much of it, it's got to be dealt with fast because there's truckloads behind there. So unfortunately, that's the biggest topic, is how can you move this stuff faster? Mm-hmm. And we've lost focus. And Curtis did allude to the fact that it does start when a customer return begins. But in my world, and what I've learned over the years, it starts when you're going to sell the product. If you don't sell it right, it's going to come back and slam you. And so we don't talk enough about that. That's related to the measurement customer sat, right? Customer satisfaction, net promoter score. Those are out there. They're great tools, but they're not being used very well. So there's the speed. The other trend that's dangerous, as far as I'm concerned, is the retailers and e-tailers are giving mm-hmm. credit without taking the product back.
Yeah.
Now that's a financial decision, and I think it misses the brand decision. And that's another dangerous topic that's out there that needs to be paid attention to. And then The growth of the secondary market, though, has been wonderful. I mean, Curtis and others are helping to fill that secondary market. So we're creating great values for consumers in different marketplaces and different demographics. People who couldn't buy computers before now get to buy refurbished computers at a great deal. People who couldn't buy name brand clothing can now find some of it in these secondary outlets. So there's some great things happening. So those are the three off the top of my head, Greg, I'd throw at you.
Yeah, that all excellent points, because part of returns is there is an underlying, I don't know what if you want to call it, but sort of a fraud potential there whenever you have returns, right? Yeah. And imagine someone just buying the goods with no intention of ever returning them and just say they need to return them, knowing the policy of a particular retailer or brand or whatever, right?
Well, you know, when you think about it, one of the big opportunities, watch outs that everybody in the retail world needs to be concerned about is just the brand protection, because it's not just around the people that get, you know, we don't require the returns, but there's, you know, back, you know, if you go back to the 90s, believe it or not, that's why I have this gray hair, probably about 20-25% of what got returned was liquidated. The rest of it went back to the vendor. Well, those manufacturers moved offshore. Today, it's like 60% of what gets returned ultimately gets liquidated on the secondary market. And like Tony was saying, the secondary market has grown to be over 3% of U.S. GDP. The big challenge is how does a retailer or manufacturer protect their brands and not compete with their primary stream of commerce? So it's a complex business that can have a lot more impact than, well, I only have an 8% return rate. Well, if you don't handle that 8% return rate correctly, you're going to lose a lot of money, first of all, and you're going to start impacting your, if you go on eBay and search any kind of manufacturer, UPC, you will see 70,000 different people, literally 70,000 different items for that manufacturer retail being sold on eBay. There's a certain amount of that's going to go on by, John Q. Public anyway. You don't want to take that extra 8% and allow that to go. So brand protection and security and complexity, those are the big watch outs everybody's got to be concerned with.
And brand protection has taken on a whole nother context when we saw piles of burning LVMH goods rather than those goods being distributed into re-commerce, right? It's a double-edged sword. You can devalue the brand by not policing the returns or preventing the returns, and by mishandling the disposition of those returns, like allowing them to be burned while being videoed. Yeah. There are a lot of implications. Yeah. And with transparency such that it is today, I think it's good for the consumer and good for society, frankly, to hold these businesses accountable. And I have specifically seen companies that are trying to solve that problem of there is no place in the secondary market for a Louis Vuitton bag or whatever it may be, if it's really high fashion. So it's really that transparency has really forced us to approach returns in a different way. Tony, are you seeing any of that? I know that's more prominent in Europe, but are you seeing more of those types of concerns with any of your members?
Well, the concerns on the brand, I don't think electronics manufacturers tend to burn things. It is that clothing industry, the Burberry and the Louis Vuitton world, and that's unfortunate. But I think what we're seeing in the United States is, ahead of that, there's websites being created for previously owned luxury goods, and that includes apparel. And actually, Those sites that exist are pushing the manufacturers to say, wait a minute, Nike, Adidas, Patagonia, North Face, why don't we take it back ourselves and give the customer a credit, let them buy something else, and then we'll sell it into that secondary marketplace. That was, again, Curtis and I both go back with the gray. That was very prevalent when I was at Philips for 25 years. We built a secondary market on our website selling refurbished goods. Any major manufacturer probably does that today.
Right.
But those luxury goods manufacturer, the apparel industry, has not gone there far enough. And I know that Curtis and some others are helping them get there and wake up and say, look, take this stuff back. Mm-hmm. I love Curtis's comments about the eBay and the fraudulent aspect. And that's a danger spot that everyone needs to be careful about. There is no certification process in return goods per se. There's some areas like in the mobile industry, there's some certification, but in the apparel and consumer goods, there's no good certification. Those people on eBay could have bought it at a flea market. They could have bought it at a bargain bin where literally the pallets that Curtis and other companies sell, they'll sell pallets and those pallets wind up in a store and you're literally digging through the pallet for bargains. And it's created some interesting retailing.
Or you have a YouTube channel, you buy a whole pallet and you have a 3-hour long unpacking video, which is fascinating. Let me share a couple of comments from our audience here. As Aaliyah says, as a consumer, I know what drives me to make a return a lot of the times is the simplicity of the process. Before UPS created the easy drop-off locations and a QR code I could scan, I would just give the product away. All of the printed labels and taping it is troublesome. Yeah. That's an interesting comment. If you're going to make it easy, as Tony says 1,000 times, you make it easy.
Don't be surprised.
Yeah. Mark says, repurposed goods and the circular economy in general is a great focus that has gained so much traction in the last few years. Completely agree there. Travis has an interesting comment here. I've always wondered how companies that have that kind of a policy make any money and do not go under. My main function in my job now is reverse logistics, so I'm seeing everything from both sides now. However, most of the customers I deal with are internal customers returning items to the manufacturer or our inventory for various reasons. Tony or Curtis, y'all want to speak to that a bit?
Go ahead, Curtis.
Well, I think, you know, it's they're hitting the nail on the head. I think the one comment that stood out to me, and I think, by the way, this is where the big impact in the future is when you think about the circular economy. So today, you know, today, if you look at it, when something comes back and get returned to the vendor, sold on the secondary market, returned to stock, donated, and for e-commerce, about 70% of that could go back into stock if you've got the systems and processes to pull it off. And there are solutions like reverse to forward. You get the returns back, fill the order out of it. But beyond that, if you layer on that analytics component and you keep in mind, and Tony was talking about apparel, and we have a number of apparel clients that we talk to about this, where, you know, apparel, you pretty well have to go 6 months out ahead to order it, which means by the time you get it back, if it's a winner, if it's really coming back and it's a winner, to reorder that is almost impossible. However, if you've got the systems and the analytics where you can identify what's coming back and feed that into the forward supply chain, now you can start factoring that in when you're determining your actual demand and your upstream ordering. So really, you know, it is a complete circular process where it really starts impacting from the point of initial order all the way through to the post-purchase journey of that item.
Yes.
I think that would have real impact when you think about lead times, just the value, you know, retailers' most expensive asset is their inventory, you know, so you can keep the good stuff in there. And then it's about being able to liquidate product in a way that is controlled and doesn't compete with your primary sales channel. So
a ton of comments here. I want to get to a couple of them. All of this, again, this is why we have a series. It's fascinating information and perspective. On a lighter note, Peter says he's never once returned a good bottle of scotch. Let's see here.
Even if bought via e-commerce.
If he ever does, I'll be happy to help him out with that. Let me
know. I'm into re-commerce there.
Yeah,
Sushmita shares something we've talked about before. People sometimes buy 2-3 products together just to check the best and also for delivery free reasons and keep one or two items and return the other products, kind of a referring to bracketing there. Natalie says, this is becoming my favorite conversation, preserving the brand from the front side, presence online, and the backside with returns. Excellent point there. So it's so interesting to see these retail policies and just from a sheer business standpoint, morph and evolve as different pressures are put on the industry from investors, consumers, and employees, right? on to be more sustainable, be more striving more for that circularity in the model. And then as if it's not challenging enough, by the way, consumers are wanting to buy stuff differently. It is almost a perfect storm to try to navigate through. This is why we love having thought leaders that have been there and done that in so many ways. So Greg, what are we going next here?
Yeah. So, you know, there are always in an industry this complex, I feel like there are always those things that aren't maybe are obvious, Tony, to you and Curtis, but not as obvious to the average consumer or even the average retail or distribution, manufacturing or supply chain professional. So what's something that just kind of really jumps out that you feel like people in the industry or consumers need some education on that they could really use some perspective on?
Well, I'm going to add something to the comment from Travis earlier about how is this sustainable? It's not. And it's going to come out soon. And I'll give you the world's biggest example, the company that had the words satisfaction guaranteed as part of their door handles, Sears. They took anything back from anybody. Craftsman Tools, you had a lifetime, your lifetime return policy. You screw up your screwdriver, hammer, power tools, take it back, get a new one. And yep. And my father was a perfect example. He bought a coffee maker and he'd take it back every year for a new one. I mean, that's just, they let it happen. And so companies, it will catch up with them. What happens in e-tailing is it's so exciting right now that all these new e-tailers can get funding because there's a lot of money out there looking for a home and everyone wants to bet on the next Amazon. So there's a lot of money flowing in without the end-to-end accountability yet. So there's the risk that in a year or two, we're going to see a lot of deaths in the family. And that's kind of, it's going to be from this area. They are not measuring costs. And as Curtis and I know, even within retailer and manufacturer companies, there's so many different buckets. So the losses could wind up in the supply chain bucket. And at the end of the year, the supply chain director is saying, hey, it's not my fault. You took back too many returns. I'm paying for them. So there's that accountability in the silos where this stuff lives. So these are important aspects to consider. Very important. It is not sustainable. It's going to catch up. We're going to see a clearing out or consolidation. Yep. And the companies are either going to learn to pay attention to it and integrate it. But another good example would be how many companies actually have someone in charge of the returns at their company. I think Curtis might have a word on that. There's just not many that we know of.
Yeah. We need more. Well, I think Greg, and you ask a key question. You know, the one thing that if you got to really take a look at how much more complex retail got over 2020, because it's not just about the e-com and everything we've talked about in the circular economy, but now you've got the, you know, now you look at like major .com retailers, e-tailers out there, they may only own about 20% of the inventory they sell. So you've got third party sellers on there. And then Right. You've got, you know, in the back, you know, 15 years ago, the big concern was diverters. You know, you don't sell to diverters, do you? Well, you don't hear that anymore. Now it's, well, you got third parties. Is it an authorized third party? How do you police those third parties? And how do you differentiate those returns? Because, you know, you've got a lot of big websites out there that they may sell one item, but it may come from 15 different third party sellers.
Right.
And is it an authorized item? Is it, you know, is it valid? Can, you know, so all of that kind of plays into it. So, you know, way back in the late 80s when I worked at Walmart right out of college, and I was over there reverse logistics for a number of years. We used to worry about things like, well, when all the stuff comes back from our store, it is so far beyond that now, because now that inventory never did belong to them in the first place. Maybe it was sold on this website and maybe it was sold by a third party. Was it an authorized, you know, was that item actually what was, you know,
what was represented, right?
Yeah. Is it properly represented? So the complexity is a lot different. And then you layer on top of that everything that Tony mentioned earlier about, you know, the need for speed. I mean, when you sell something, it may be wine. When it gets returned, it turns into bananas. And if you don't disposition it quickly, it's a total write-off. So
that's why you got to drink it quickly, right? Hey, I got to pose a couple comments to y'all here from our audience here. So first off, Larry Klein says the reverse chain is just as important and needs to be managed. Agreed. Travis, you're going to love this, Greg. Tommy Boy had it right when he sold those brakes without the guaranteed warranty.
That's right.
Now, with this here, this is what I want to pose. Y'all going to get this is going to be a great conversation, I think, especially with Greg's sentiments. Simon says returns are usually removed from the demand planning signal.
Right.
It's time to create quality reverse signal. So, Greg, I'd love for you to weigh in first, and then we'll go to our two guests.
Well, Curtis alluded to this earlier, 70 to 80% of what is returned, depending on the industry, is resellable, right? And you should count that as basically as incoming inventory for fulfilling your front end, your e-commerce, or even store level demand. And because demand and because consumerism has changed so much, that's going to become an increasingly important part. Look, you know, we've all heard the story of the whole bracketing story of someone in Florida buying three sizes in three different colors of a ski jacket. And then they wind up, right? They wind up in a Macy's store down in Florida somewhere. Well, you've got to figure out a way to remarket those goods. Maybe it's e-commerce, maybe it's in-store, but certainly you have to understand that that could happen. And, you know, the truth is that companies know things like bracketing are happening. They can predict the likelihood that something is coming back as soon as that purchase is made. So there's a lot of foresight there, and I think people need to take advantage of that. That's a great insight.
Agreed. And it really, as the planning profession continues to evolve and get more savvy and get more, we got our fingertips and fingers on so much data, right? And it's so far beyond just, Greg, the bane of your existence, that historical, you know, what happened in past history.
Right.
You know, it really represents kind of some of the future of, as Simon put it, that how we can incorporate reverse demand. Tony, Curtis, any comments here when it comes to planning?
Well, I think I think that's the if you look at a retailer, it really comes down. No merchant in any retailer would ever buy an item without planning in a markdown strategy at the end. You wouldn't plan your business around. Well, I'm buying this where I can initially make it 30% margins. Oh my gosh, I forgot about the clearance and the markdowns. Now I only made 15%. It's basically the same idea from an analytics and math standpoint. In terms of demand, you're buying this product. You may have to reorder it. Will you sell through of it? How much of that could come back, that could filter back into your good inventory for primary sales? That could have a huge impact on the amount of investment. So I think it's only a matter of time. You got to have the analytics. You got to have the systems. You know, it takes a village, but I think it's a big opportunity for manufacturers and retailers alike.
Agreed. Tony.
Agree. And that's where artificial intelligence starts to play in the reverse space. It's hard to understand how it can be used, but the demand planners should start using it. Because as Curtis alludes to, and we all know, it is very complicated. The forward side, you know, I love you guys because you take us in as a stepchild, right? We are the, you know, redheaded stepchild of the supply chain world. Because everything looks pretty going forward, but coming back, it just doesn't look very pretty. So the AI needs to take that challenge on and calculate all of these aspects out, including, you know, it's not just forecasting how much will come back and using that. Then you have to take into account how much will come back in the wrong place, damage potentially.
Sure.
You know, clothing is interesting because there, in the electronics side, you're required to test it and make sure it's good. The government regulates that one. In clothing and apparel industry, there are no regulations. So the regulations are the people who touch the return, and they may not check it for, and it goes back on the shelf because they didn't see the stain. All right. So
that is a real possibility. I mean, that, you know, you think about taking hats back, right?
Sure.
And the possibility of little creepy crawlies and things like that. Absolutely, that is an absolute fact. And I think some retail organizations are better about that. Nordstrom is really particularly good about laundering those products when they come back, but not everybody is.
We do a lot of apparel. And, you know, there's, you know, you like kind of Tony alluded to, there's kind of the old school way. We're going to get it back and we're just going to sort it by men's, women's, children's, and all that. you know, but, you know, there's a lot of e-tailers out there where you get decision trees where you can inspect it. Because, again, this is something where it's much more complex than you think, because it's just because of the cost versus the relative value. You know, if it's a $5 garment, do you really want to spend $250 trying to figure out if it can be folded, rebagged, reticketed, and sent back? And by the way, it changes because now it's spring and it's not winter. So it's got to be flexible. But I think it is a big opportunity. Clearly, there's solutions out there. But like Tony said, there's no regulations out there.
Right.
The P&L. If you do it right, you can make more money. If you don't do it right, your margins are going to suffer.
So I want to take an informal poll as we start to wind the interview down. So in 2020, I returned exactly one product online. Unfortunately, I'm off to a worse start in 2021 as I've already sent two things back. To our community, how many, roughly, and then we're not going to point fingers. I'm just kind of curious. Drop a number, a rough number of how many returns you sent back, especially e-commerce. Focus on e-commerce, of course, for 2020. I kind of want to take a pulse if folks will play along. So, Greg, as we start to wrap with Tony and Curtis, and Tony, we want to touch on that March 3rd event before we do. But this is fascinating, and I want to pose this question here from Natalie. Curtis and Tony in particular, I'd love for y'all to weigh in here. And I want to see those numbers in the comments. Come on, y'all don't let me down. Natalie says, we're starting the conversation on sampling to address the bracketing concept. I guess Natalie is at their organization. How can the consumer try on the product and still address the return and reject element? Very interesting. Tony, do you want to start?
Well, we've had some fun about the software over the years that, you take a picture of yourself and in front of a green screen and they can outfit you correctly, maybe. The reality is this is where AI again plays. AI can tell, Natalie, you bought this blouse in a size 6 and 7 and 8 before, and you returned 6 and 8. So this manufacturer, maybe size 7 will work best for you. And that's still challenging, but that's an opportunity that's out there. Track the history. And then I wish we could lobby Washington, the apparel industry. If it's going to be a size 8, make it a size 8 for every garment by every manufacturer. Make it the same. But that's another issue that regarding standards. But again, the history is a key. You can track the history of the consumer and say, this didn't work for you before. That shoe size, you returned it from Johnson & Johnson. In a nice way, you can say that, as opposed to some of the not nice ways, I guess. So that's one opportunity that's out there of not trying on is impossible. We talked about the social media impact of if they show you the article of clothing on a model, it's more likely you'll return it because you just don't look that good. So there's that when you put it on. Sorry, it's you just don't look. So they stop. The best practice is don't use a model. The other best practice is don't just show black and tell them it's in green and red. Show every color as accurately as possible. And that helps. But the trying on aspect is, and that's been a challenge even at retail. The brick and mortar haven't allowed a lot of trying on of things lately too. So there's got to be some other areas of opportunity there, and maybe Curtis can add to that.
Yeah, Curtis, any additional comments?
Yeah, not to be a contrarian. I think you see a lot of that today. Obviously, Zappos is world renowned for buy and return. But I think you see a lot of this with the Amazon clothing lines and some of the things that Walmart's doing. Frankly, I think retailers, e-tailers are happy to send as many sizes as you want. And if you return it, then you've got to have the processes to do the inspection and possibly cleaning, depending on the item, get it back into that's the part that's missing. Keep in mind, we had 30,000 storefronts closed in the United States last year. A lot of those were clothing stores. People have no choice but to buy online, try it on. If it doesn't fit, return it. And steps up to the plate will be just like when Walmart said, we'll take back all your returns, get satisfaction guaranteed. They broke out and then everybody caught up. And I think it's going to be the same way here. So now that being said, you've got, there was a time where we actually talked about having an all factory engineer in, my past life. I don't want my friends at Inmar to think that's been recent, but, what happens if it's stained? What if it smells like smoke and you got to figure all that out. You know, that's easily, that's doable. That stuff's already there. But I do think that your that whole concept, you know, customer satisfaction is always going to be forefront.
Yeah.
You know, so then it's about minimizing the impact of the supply chain to get three or more products where maybe you only needed one, or provide better upfront sales information like this, you know, as you see on some websites today, this tends to run small. Here's the measurements, you know, more and more intuitive guides. You know, it's, you know, that's, there's a lot of young, smart folks out there with heuristic degrees. That's all about trying to make things intuitive so they can go in there and help design these websites and things like that. Mm. But that being said, I can't think of anything more frightening than me standing in front of a green screen and taking a picture of myself before I try on.
Hey, it's around the corner.
I don't want to be myself, right? I sure don't want anyone else to.
But yeah. But we need to ask Curtis in the return facilities where the clothing goes through. Do you have those magic lights from CSI that you wave over and you can see the blood stains? And I just want to know if you got giant ones of those being used. Every article of clothing passes through, and it looks safe.
You know, I tell you two things. One, you know, we are the largest processor of apparel, return apparel in America. And everything after that, which is the second thing, it's confidential. So I'm not going to say if we do or not.
All right. Wow. So, hey, quick, as we move right along, we start to wind things down. We want to make sure folks can connect with both Curtis and Tony. But, you know, we challenged folks in the comments and our community to weigh in with how many returns. And I'm gonna zoom through these really quick. Rhonda says about five. Mark says plead the fifth. Charles says about five. Matthew says about nine. Sadanan says none. I'm with you there, man. You're best than me. Steven says me one. My sister 10 this year. Kimberly about three. Peter, Greg says zero. He really doesn't do e-commerce. How about that?
He only wears that yellow shirt, I'm pretty sure.
Kevon says one. Sean says two. Guess my girlfriend's going to be asking him to go to the future high-end Plato's Closet in the future. Peter also says he supports his local economy and buys from local stores. Okay, one last comment, Greg, and I'll turn it over to you. Let's see, Natalie. I think Natalie and I kind of are reading from the same book here. Not many returns. I deal with what I choose. And that's kind of what you know, we do around here in our family. You know, first off, Amanda's much savvier at all things technology for starters. That goes without saying. But, you know, if something's a little bit off and the color's a little bit off or how it works a little bit off, more 9 times out of 10, I find a different use for it. I don't know. I don't know if y'all do the same thing. But, Greg, let's make sure before we wrap up too quickly here, we got to make sure we can get folks connected, right?
Golly, yeah. I have a feeling people are going to want to talk to Curtis. So, Curtis, tell folks how they can connect with you and with Inmar.
It's easy. You can go just email me at curtis.grieve@inmar.com, or you can go to www.inmar.com and find us from there. So, or hit me up on LinkedIn. I'd be happy to talk to you and help you out any way I can.
Excellent. In particular, Travis Kent, maybe you may be hearing from him. He had a couple of questions around technology platforms, it looks like, and inventory and stock and stuff. So good stuff there. Okay, Gregory.
I can't believe there's anybody that doesn't know how to get a hold of Tony, but if there isn't, it looks like we do have a few new faces here. Tony, how can folks reach out to you?
Well, I'm simpler. You don't have to try to handle my last name. Just put tony@rla.org. That's our website also, rla.org. But I'm sorry, I need to address the comment from Michael about you all reverse logistics Jedis have beards and those shiny glasses. I'm like, thank you very much. I feel so honored. Just don't have time to shave anymore. That's really part of it.
I'm just trying to hide my chin. You know, I got too many chins.
So we should say, Tony, I'm surprised you didn't share this too, because you told me one thing in terms of pronouncing your last name that stuck, and it works just beautifully. It's like My Sharona.
That's it.
The song, My Sharona. So for
anyone with Tony's love for music, it's hard to overstate how important that analogy is, right?
A little bit. Thank you.
But his love for helping folks get connected and develop themselves professionally may equal his love for music. And on that note, Nice little segue there.
Wow.
Tony, brilliant. let's talk about this event coming up March 3rd. What are you so excited about, and why should folks care?
I'm excited about the cocktail kit. I wish I could show you. I just got a photograph of the cocktail courier that arrived at my house with a couple of, looks like baby gin and tonic bottles and vodka bottles and an orange. So nice. That's on the way to anyone who's registered, and it is free to join the RLA. I didn't clearly say that. It is free to join the community. And in our community, we put on events like this from industry thought leaders, from new innovations, new solutions. And next Wednesday at 4 o'clock, we will have a presentation, as you alluded to, Scott. In fact, Scott was rather modest. He's being our guest host moderator, trying to corral all of us there, Tom and Jerome and Paula, Padua, Sandra, and myself, in a conversation about innovations in the supply chain, including that virtual tour of a robotics facility. We'll be talking AI, what's the latest and greatest. And again, I can't say it enough. It's easy to join the community at rla.org. It's free. You're late for the cocktail for next week. I'm sorry. They've already shipped them all out, and they don't want the oranges to go bad. So,
If folks sign up, I'll send them a can of Bush Light, and they'll feel like they're one of the.
Hey, if I could, I got to tell you, if you want to, the best place for best practices in reverse, you got to be a member of RLA and go to the conference. But I do have a question for Tony. What are you supposed to do with the orange?
Next week after the 4 o'clock session.
I was John with the gin and the vodka, but I wasn't sure about the orange. So.
We've hired a mixologist to be a virtual bartender to show you how to put some drinks together, Curtis.
Oh, there
so,
you go.
So it's all exciting. So virtual happy hour starts sometime around 5 o'clock Eastern.
Awesome. We found out yesterday we have our own, amongst other things, mixologist right here on staff at Supply Chain Now, which I knew there's a reason why we got along so well, Greg. We have our own bartender right here.
Yeah, that's
under
right.
Our nose, right.
That's right. Play the dog.
Well, folks, this has been a blast as always. Tony, you always bring it, and you bring wonderful guests that really tell it like it is, been there, done that. And that's what we love about the series and these conversations. We've added your LinkedIn links, I believe, in the show notes, making it easy for folks to connect with you both. And of course, Tony and Curtis also shared more direct ways. So thanks so much, Curtis Grieve, VP Liquidation and Remarketing with Inmar Intelligence, and Tony Shiroda, Executive Director with the Reverse Logistics Association. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
All righty.
Honored. All right.
I love that. There are so many, every so often in a live stream, when I'm thinking, okay, which one of eight possible directions are we going to go next? I've got that deer in a moment in headlights moment because I'm trying to make that instant decision. Can you relate to that, Greg?
I'm sorry, Scott. I wasn't listening. What? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are so many ways you can go, right? Particularly with this topic. And it has become more complex in the last 12 months. So absolutely, I get it.
Yep. Definitely. Well, really appreciate all the great comments. This has been a full week of live streams. I think Tuesday was the only day that we did not have a live stream. And that, there's just that much to tackle across not just global supply chain, but global business. And it's been really a week full of learning. So, Greg, as we wrap here, what has been one of your favorite portions of today's conversation? Just one thing.
It's always the same. It's always Tony's focus on trying to prevent returns to actually reduce the flow of reverse logistics and circular and re-commerce or whatever you want to call it, right? But that is a challenge that's not only put out to the retailers, but also to the consumers. I happen to personally hate returns. I usually don't order things until I absolutely have to have them. So I am compulsive about making sure that it will work, which is, I know, very, very uncommon. I think of returns as a failure as a consumer. So I probably think of things a little bit differently than a lot of folks do. But I think that we, the consumer, if we really care about sustainability, if we really care about circular economy, if we really care about reuse and the, you know, in the economics of retail, then we have to acknowledge that we, as I say, consumers are the beginning and the end of the supply chain. everything starts with us, and we have to take that ownership. And I know that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen for a vast, vast majority of consumers. But if even just a few of us are just a little bit more diligent, take a little bit of that pain on the front end rather than on, you know, rather than after the delivery has been made, I think that there's a huge opportunity for impact here. Look, I deal with companies. I'm dealing with companies every day. This is the hottest space for investment in supply chain today, reverse re-commerce. And, you know, I see it every day, companies trying to preempt, trying to put goods back into commerce, as Curtis said, be they used or refurbed or whatever, but trying to put those goods back in. I just think that's an important part of what we need to do as consumers is to help prevent that.
I agreed. I think that's the most important thing as consumers, and all of us are, whether you're in supply chain or not, we've got to embrace that responsibility. And to your point, if just a handful of folks will embrace it and take that into their daily or weekly buying decisions, you could we could really move the needle. And while to Curtis's point, we're still moving upstream and designing for CE and doing a better job there. There's lots of interesting reads about how some of the companies are leveraging all walks of life to get into those product development discussions. That's really cool for a variety of reasons. But man, we own it, and we've got to act on that. So the power is in our hands in many ways. So Greg, that's an excellent key takeaway. And really appreciate all the comments here. Peter, thanks so much. This is all lots of kind stuff. We appreciate you too, Peter and Rhonda and Natalie and all the folks that were with us right along throughout this conversation here today. So last reminder, if you enjoy these conversations, make sure to check us out at supplychainnow.com. We're working hard to serve as the voice of supply chain. You can, we publish a podcast every day, sometimes Saturday and Sunday. Depends on how the production schedule is grinding. Of course, Tequila Sunrise, Tech Talk, Digital Supply Chain Podcast, Digital Transformers, which Kevin's doing a remarkable job. And should we let the cat out of the bag of one of our newest series? I'm not sure, Greg. Maybe we save that.
I think we've got to lay supply chain is boring on them and hold back, right? Always leave them wanting more. Somebody really smart said that.
Well, Monday, undoubtedly, we're launching Supply Chain Now in Espanol, so y'all check that out. Fewer things up our sleeves, but most importantly, really appreciate our Tony and Curtis. Really appreciate all of folks in the comments sharing wonderful perspective, making our day, making our Friday. And Greg, a pleasure to do it with you. On behalf of our entire team here at Supply Chain Now, we got to challenge you like we challenge our team every day. Hey, do good, give forward, be the change that's needed. On that note, we'll see you next time here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for being a part of our Supply Chain Now community. Check out all of our programming at supplychainnow.com and make sure you subscribe to Supply Chain Now anywhere you listen to podcasts. And follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. See you next time on Supply Chain Now.